table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Succession.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Losers.
Men.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solid.
Responsibility.
You fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sasstel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. I'm Jim Hutchings, and with me is guest host Daylene Sliss and special guest Neelu Sachdev, Executive Director of the Regina Immigrant Women's Center. Welcome, Daylene and Neelu.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Welcome, Neelu.
Thank you.
Before we begin today, I would just like to say on behalf of us here at Human Rights Radio that our hearts and thoughts go out to our friends and neighbors in Fort McMurray. It's hard to know what to say during these times, but please know that we're thinking of you and hope for the safety of you, your pets, the first responders, the firefighters, and everyone else involved in these devastating and tragic fires. It affects people, wildlife. It shatters everything. Saskatchewan has really pulled together to send funds and water bombers. And to everyone else, if you can make a donation to the Red Cross, to the Alberta Fires Appeal, they could really use our collective support. And I would just like to read a quote by Nobel Peace Prize winner Albert Schweitzer. When man finally learns to control the elements, when the winds will be quiet and the earth cannot be torn apart, when there will be no loneliness, no destitution, no war, when the last hungry man, woman, or child is fed, only then will there be no need for the Red Cross. So if we can give to the Red Cross for these people to combat the situation in Fort McMurray, that would be wonderful if we could do that.
I think I was telling you earlier, Daylene, I have a friend in Fort McMurray who I know has lost his house.
Yes.
With all his family effects, you know, all the personal things, you know, that you collect in a lifetime, things that are very important to you, and they're gone.
It's an unimaginable situation there right now. And
very scary.
Very frightening.
Mm-hmm. It appears to be like a movie.
Yes.
It is.
You know?
I think they've had at least one death as a result.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, and I think it was as a result of a traffic accident.
Yes, yeah.
Of trying to escape. And the pictures, the video on the television, it looks like a war zone, an apocalyptic is what they're
Armageddon.
Describing. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So just know that we're thinking of you, and like I said, it's hard to know what to say.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So now, on to our show. Nilu, thank you so much for joining us today. I would just like to say a few things about Nilu, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Nilu was born in India and raised in Los Angeles, California. She has an honors degree in psychology from California State University and moved to Regina well over 20 years ago now, I think. She is the recipient of the 2007 YWCA Women of Distinction Award for Cultural Heritage and teaches Bhangra dance classes to children and adults. And I'm fairly certain I saw you performing at the Mackenzie Art Gallery during International Women's Day this year,
yeah.
too. You were wonderful, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you fill in some of the blanks? Because you're very difficult to research. You have a hidden history.
I don't know
history.
If that's good or bad. No, you're right. I've some achievements are out there, and others aren't always out there necessarily. But yes, I do teaching. That's my other hat. That's as a volunteer at the Arcola East Community Association. And I have been doing that for many, many, many years. I enjoy that a lot. The other thing I do, of course, is run the Regina Immigrant Women's Center. And I've been doing that for many years as well. And I just enjoy both of those activities a lot. They're very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to sort of delve into one to get the strength for the other, you know, because it can be very frustrating running a nonprofit organization, as I'm sure a lot of people will agree who've done that.
Absolutely.
Or worked in one.
CJTR.
Yeah, exactly.
There are challenges.
There's a lot of
Absolutely.
Challenges. There's a lot of rewards as well,
mm-hmm.
Which is why we keep doing what we do, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But there are definitely a lot of challenges, yes.
Do you find that you get the strength from the dancing to do the nonprofit
yes.
work?
I do. I get the energy
mm-hmm.
From the dancing.
The music and the
and
movement.
And the music. That's what, you know, and it adds another dimension to my life. Although I didn't start it for me, I started it for my children years ago to give them some culture, you know, their cultural heritage, so to speak. And I thought music and dance would be even more effective than language because it can resonate with you even if you don't know the language, right? And it just took off, and we've been doing it in Regina, Bhangra, for over 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's something that's my thing that, again, like I said, gives me the energy to go and do the other work that I do. And it gives another dimension to my life, a fun dimension,
mm-hmm.
which I can also incorporate into my other work with women.
Right. And I think everybody needs an outside activity because then it takes
yes.
you away from your work and... You just need to get away from that for a while.
Yeah, so you get away from it, and then sometimes I can incorporate it into the work, like at International Women's Day this year in March at the Mackenzie Art Gallery. We did just an afternoon of dance, interactive dance with women. Only with women.
Only women.
Yes. Only women were allowed. It was terrific.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Because some women have a hard time dancing in front of males, you know,
mm-hmm.
in front of the other gender. I mean, they want to be more free than that. So we wanted to respect that.
And women were letting loose, let me tell you.
Well,
I let loose.
Well, so your classes, though, at the Arcola Center, do they include men?
We used to, for the recreation class, we used to have men as well.
Used to.
Yeah, and then actually men sort of fell off the wayside because the performance became a bigger part of it as well. So the women want to do the performance. Men don't always want to do that. So it's just women now. Yeah.
Men with performance issues. Well,
I know.
What can I say?
We better not go down that road. So tell us about the Regina Women's Immigrant Center.
The Regina Immigrant Women's Center, as an organization, has been around for over 30 years. But I've been involved in it since for about 13 years now, and as the executive director. And I came to it because I saw there was a challenge and there was a need to rise up to a challenge and make this small advocacy organization into a service delivery organization. Even then, 13 years ago, there were women who needed more than just advocacy. They needed daily programs and services, and these were women who were immigrant, maybe had come as refugees, maybe had come as immigrants. And so it's just become a lot more than it was then because of the influx of immigrants that we've had over the last 10 years. So now we see about 700 to 800 newcomers each year coming in to take advantage of our a variety of services, which include English language training, informal conversation, informal recreational programming such as sewing, and more formal pre-employment classes. And now we've just added some youth employment programs, which are great because we have a lot of immigrant youth in the city now who want to integrate into the labor market. So we're providing services for several age groups in terms of integration.
So when I was reading about your programs, I was noticing that sewing is very big, as you've mentioned. Why sewing in particular?
It's only just become big in the last year and a half or so because we were having immigrant women coming in saying, can we learn sewing here? Because we're teaching computers, you know, computer classes we have anyway. But then they would come and say, well, we want to do something. What do you know? Well, I know how to sew, but I've never used a Canadian sewing machine. So can you teach me, tell me where I can go to learn some more sewing so I can do some sewing at home and maybe I can even do some mending and make some money. So we had a few women coming in, more than a few, because my staff started saying to me, Nilu, can we start a sewing program? Hmm. So it was just, you know, these are sort of like kitchen table conversations, you might say, and we actually have a table that looks like a kitchen table at the office. So we decided, okay, let's try that. So we begged, borrowed, or stole. Well, not necessarily stole.
Figuratively.
Yes, figuratively. Some sewing machines and started a program and then asked one of the other organizations, the Multicultural Council of Saskatchewan, if they would assist us by providing some funding and sent them a proposal. They gave us a little bit of funding. And so we were able to recruit volunteers and get some donations and also buy some fabric and get the machines fixed. So that we've had 5 or 6 working machines, not the best, but they're going. Mm-hmm. And so we've had women lining up to sign up for these are small 6 to 8 week sessions mm-hmm. where they learn basics of the sewing and more if they have a better handle on it already. But what they learn is English at the same time. Because that's another element sure. that's missing right. for them.
So they're having conversations while
yes.
they're learning.
And they're developing some confidence. And they're developing a peer group that they can identify with. You know, because not all of them want to be in English classes. Mm-hmm. Adult learning is not as easy as it sounds to a lot of us. We've grown up in an age where it's acceptable and we do it. And in a country where that's also the case. Not in every country is that the case, and especially not so for women. They feel once the societies feel, many societies, that once women are married, unless they already have a career or something, like they're mm-hmm. basically too old. And so we have women come in and say, I'm too old to learn.
Oh.
Anything new. So.
And how old would they be, like 25?
Maybe, or at least mothers, you know, yes. they're married and they're mothers and mm-hmm. they feel that they're doing what they're supposed to do.
Right.
If they have a craft, such as sewing, they might do it at home on the side. Mm-hmm. But in terms of learning something mm-hmm. new.
Yeah, a different point of view altogether. I have a friend who got her social work degree She started when she was 49 and got it when she was 53.
See? Mm-hmm.
So that's...
And we have a lot of women now, though. And but again, what I say, it's not true of everybody, mind you, but it's always true of some, right? And it was more true as the years, in years past. Now we're seeing the world is smaller.
Right.
Everybody's more aware globally. Everybody knows about internet and the phone. Some of them have it on their phones. A lot of them do. They know about Facebook. You know, they know about the social media sites and all of this stuff. And so they may not necessarily know how to use them, but they know about them. And so learning is not something that's so foreign to women anymore. It's a little bit easier to get them to commit. But a lot of women we find come after they've learned how to live in Canada for a little while. So in other words, it's time for their integration.
Mm-hmm. That was actually going to be one of my questions. How do you think the skills that they've acquired and learned and the groups that they've come to know and you know, the people that they've become friends with, how do you think that it impacts their home lives, with their husbands and this new culture that they've become a part of? Do you living in the Western world, do you think it impacts their home lives in a certain way? Do you think, you know, because some of them come from cultures where maybe it's not necessarily looked upon positively?
Yeah, it's there's always a little bit of a uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
With some women as to how they're coming out and wanting to integrate on their own, you know, in terms of taking English courses or computer or whatever is going to impact their personal lives. Some of them are more uncertain than others. And so we work with them, or we try to nurture and support them at the level that they're at through our programs. So for that reason, when we started our computer course classes a few years ago, we just had one level, the basic level. Okay. And then we saw a lot of them were at that. Some of them were even below that. So we were just doing keyboarding with them. So we have to adjust our programming, not according to our standards, but the standards that we see that of the people, of the women who are coming in. And I'm saying our programming is for men and women, some of it, but a lot of it is just for women.
Mm-hmm.
And so we adjusted the classes. So now there's the keyboarding, there's the level one, the very basic, and then there's the level two, the ones who are coming who are already educated but don't know where they fit in Regina or in the Canadian context, you know, because mm-hmm. they came from a different orientation and here they are here, so how do they fit? But they have some skills.
Right.
So they have to, in terms to answer your question, I think it's by practice, by coming out every day, by setting a routine, by starting at a level that they're comfortable at, they slowly aspire to the next level and see others aspiring, go home and talk like the rest of us do, and then it becomes a habit
mm-hmm.
to want to get higher,
right?
So we find that then they want to go through, they want to go to structured learning sometimes.
So tell us who the people are that are coming to Canada, to Saskatchewan, to Regina. What are the common denominators? What are the differences? Who are the people coming here? Are they professional people? Are they a mixture of people? Are they from poverty-stricken countries?
It's a mixture.
Is it?
It's a combination from many different countries, a lot of traditional countries, traditional cultures, but a lot of educated women and men, a lot of youth. We just started two youth employment programs, and they're full. We have so many applicants for the spots that are available. Because they're educated young women and young men, a lot of young women. So I would say they are very educated. Some of them are maybe not as educated because they've come to join family. But then they're very they're very motivated to learn. That's what we're seeing in the demographic now of newcomers. They're very motivated to learn and to take advantage of opportunities. So it's like you present the opportunity, and if they can figure out how to... Childcare is a huge issue, I would say, you know, for women. And that's what kind of puts the damper sometimes on stuff. And I'm saying damper because... Women may be very motivated, but when you have a lot of responsibilities at home and you have no family support, or very little family support, and the work environment isn't easy here, you have to work so many hours and you have to work at it, which might be also different than in other countries, and then the weather is harsh, you know, for which reason, now that spring is here, everybody's coming to our door.
Right.
Because they can walk. They can take the bus. It's so much easier to get around. But winter, we find those numbers drop off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, what is are those some of the issues, some of the problems, some of the things that are sort of the problems to maybe success for some of the refugees? Do you think, what are the main roadblocks to success?
I would say language and culture is a huge one. We find language is a huge one. Childcare is another huge one. Although for some of our programs, we have child minding so that while the women are in class or in an activity, there's child minding next door. So there's people looking after their children for that amount of time, but that's like 2 hours maximum. But in terms of finding child care, it's paying the money for it. That's a big challenge, you know, because if you're earning, you don't want to pay all your money for child care. Some cultures aren't very happy to leave their children with somebody else. I mean, they want their language and their culture. Transportation is a huge barrier, huge barrier. We find for all of our programs, it's a huge barrier for attendance. Unless, even if there's a bus right across the street or right there that drops you off, it's still a barrier for the winter. So I would say language, culture, transportation, and childcare are some of the ones that we find the main barriers. Education is to some extent, but there's a lot of programming now in Regina, thanks to the provincial government in our case that is offered by us. Even it's free, so I mean it's not that money is an issue for them, and it's also available in the neighborhood areas. So we try to, like, our structured ESL classes are at the Broadway United Church on Broadway Avenue, which is because we were trying to go into the neighborhood to provide the programming, so they don't all have to come too far. You know, it's a little bit easier. So I think that in terms of reach, it's there. Programs are there, but it's just those other barriers that I said may impact how much they access the programming.
I was just going to say, it occurs to me that there could be an issue culturally with the family wanting to keep as much of their culture and their language as possible. And so you've got the breadwinner going out and making the money, but the mother's expected to stay home and sort of keep the culture, keep the language. And the less she goes out, the more the culture is preserved. That might be the attitude.
It does. That happens because the thing is, in a lot of societies, people live in joint families, you know, or have larger extended families. And here, if you don't have that, you do have to do it yourself. The parents in the nuclear family have to provide that training or that cultural training or education to their children. And yes, if the mother goes out too, then it's going to be, you know, quick dinners, right? Like we're all used to. And, you know, a lot of traditional cooking isn't done in an hour.
No.
It takes much longer because it's done from scratch. So you have to go home. I mean, I'm from the Indian culture, and you have to go home, and I have to chop the vegetables and start the cooking process, and it'll take about an hour and a half to 2 hours before everything is done if I'm making a traditional meal. If I'm just opening a can, You know?
Yep.
Which is my traditional cooking.
Or a bag of something.
Yes.
Salad, but maybe salad is not what I like to eat.
Right.
Or not in that form. Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just taking us. So I think for the women, it's that's one of their major responsibilities is preservation of the family and the food that they want to eat, right? And so to bring that about, that takes longer time. So that we, and you know, in because of that, a lot of our programs we find are more successful in the morning between 9:30 and 11:30.
Right.
Because they can come, though, for those 2 hours, they're very willing to come with their preschool children and then go home, make lunch for the children, and then stay home for the afternoon, do the all the afternoon chores.
Okay.
Yeah. So we found that to be very, we have a drop-in English conversation program at our center. And it's most successful in the morning.
Well, believe it or not, we have burned through the first half hour of the show. We're at the halfway point.
Wow.
And you're listening to Human Rights Radio, and we've got myself, Jim Hutchings, and my guest host, Daylene Sliz, and our special guest, Neelu Sachdev, who's the executive director of the Regina Immigrant Women's Center. And we're going to continue our conversation, but first we're going to do a break, followed by some music that Neelu has chosen, and we'll talk a little bit about that after the music. So we will be right back.
shamiyane ke talle aaja
Okay, and that was Jai Ho. And Neela, why did you pick that music?
Well, I like energetic and vibrant music, and I really love Indian music or some of the instruments that are played in Indian music. And I thought this was just something that came to my mind when you asked me.
It's lovely music and a great movie, if yes. anybody hasn't seen it.
It's a terrific movie.
Yeah. And I go for the underdog,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So do we. So, getting back now to the, I want to say it correctly because I know I said it wrong the last time, the Regina Immigrant Women's Center. I think I mixed up the immigrant and women. And I apologize for that. So, there's education, integration. We also have enrichment and empowerment, which is so important for women.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about those particular segments of the center?
Well, education, of course, is the number one. And that's, of course, through the practical programs that we offer in English and in computer literacy. And in conversational literacy. And then, of course, we have integration. It starts to happen once you have more language. And in Regina, on the prairies, when you live as an immigrant or you come in as an immigrant or refugee, you need the language to start the integration process on a fuller scale. Otherwise, you're kind of left more in isolation. That's what we've seen with the women. And then to get into integration, you need some enrichment in your life. And I think that we offer that at our center through the sewing program, for instance, through family support, because we have crisis counseling. And we have any support that a family needs. We have housing assistance, so looking for apartments or a house and maintaining how to maintain permanent housing. And empowerment is the end result of all of this that we do. Empowerment comes along slowly, but it also becomes the end result because you want to be able to have the women be independent and be able to function in their new environment on whatever level it is that they need to or they want to function. That's their choice, or else to introduce them to new levels of empowerment. For them, having a bank account, having a credit card, you know, learning how to own a house or why you need credit. I'll give an example. A few years ago, I had a woman come in my office and say to me, I want to buy a house, a condo. She says, I went to the bank. I have savings because we have savings. She says she wanted to use her savings because she'd been working pretty hard for a few years. And she says, but guess what? The bank won't let me. Give me a loan. And I said, why? On the rest of it. She says, because I don't have credit. Because she had never had a mm-hmm. credit card. And I said, well, you have to, why do I need credit? I said, because that shows that you're good at paying back.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have a credit card first. She says, but I don't want a credit card because then I'll be in debt. Because I'll have to buy something on credit and then it means I'm not going to be able to pay for it tangibly. And I said, but that's what in this society, it's considered good if you have a little bit of debt and then you pay on it
right.
consistently back, right?
Right?
But you know, that's a very foreign concept to some people.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's empowerment. When you learn a concept, you learn to work with it. That's integration, and then that's empowerment.
Mm-hmm. And the enrichment.
And enrichment comes to your life because you learn those things and you are empowered. Then you can not just pursue what you have to do in your daily life, but what you want to do. Isn't that what enrichment is of our life?
Yes.
That you become richer right? So we don't sit down the women and tell them enrichment. Mm-hmm. But enrichment comes also when you can take care of the other parts of your life, your responsibilities, so to speak, on a daily basis, to your family, to your bank account, to your, you know, to your everybody else in your life, and then, or to your career, to your work, and then you're enriched in another way.
So it encapsulates everything that
yes.
you, that it just, everything comes together.
Comes together.
And there's a pre-employment program. Is
there's a pre-employment program.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
okay.
That's, it includes employment counseling, and it includes learning through workshops how to work with Canadian, in the Canadian culture, Canadian
right.
work culture, which is very different.
Resumes and
yeah,
following up.
It's following up. It's learning how to work in the Canadian work culture, how to answer to employers, how to be an employee
mm-hmm.
In terms of attendance, in terms of integration within the company or the work culture that you're working in, and what it means to be able to do that. Because sometimes people are very unsure of how to approach Canadian workplaces, and especially women mm-hmm. who may not have worked out of the house before.
Right.
Even if it's just a basic job that you're doing, let's say labor intensive, more like cleaning, which we find a lot of newcomers get into. But even for that, you do need to learn mm-hmm. a few things, you know?
Right.
So, do you find you'll sometimes find businessmen of, say, of an ethnicity will be helpful to people of the same ethnicity in giving them employment and giving them opportunities?
Well, sometimes, but I wouldn't say all the time.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say all the time. I think sometimes, and it depends again, you know, today's workplace is, you need, if you meet the requirements, mm-hmm. job requirements, then you have a better chance, right?
Right.
And that could mean on all levels, it, not just English, but it means having the skills. And having the transferable skills. So sometimes employers who are of the same ethnicity, they will give a chance to everybody
mm-hmm.
the same.
Sure.
We hope they will.
Right.
And even those who aren't, we hope they will too, right?
Right.
We prepare, our staff prepares the clients in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to the client. So the interview matters a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The interview matters a lot. But, you know, now we have a lot of young people who are work ready. We have a program called Career Focus, which is for youth 16 to 30 or 18 to 30 years old, and they're supposed to be work ready. So when they come to us, if they are work ready and they just need some assistance to get into a work placement, we can do that, and we're finding that we can. So they mm-hmm. are there. We didn't know we could run that kind of a program successfully, but you know what? There's youth who are work ready coming from other countries or having prepared a little bit on their own here. So that's really good to see.
Mm-hmm.
So you take in 700 to 800 refugees a year.
Not refugees, I would say. Newcomers.
Newcomers. Okay. You're a little bit crowded where you are in your building. You're talking about plans for a new building to accommodate the center's needs. What's the status of that? How's
There's
that coming
no,
along?
It's status quo right now, I would say.
Boy.
It's coming along in the sense that we're still trying. We were hoping Santa would bring us a new building. That didn't happen yet.
That darn Santa.
Yeah. We're still working on it. It's really hard because we work with funding that's project funding, and it doesn't include capital expenses. And because we've been in a house that has low costs, rental costs, we don't have as much rent money on a monthly basis from all of our projects put together that we can afford a building. You know, buildings to lease that would house all of our programs are very expensive. We have three buildings right now that we work out of. One in the main site on Lorne Street, that's our little house.
Mm-hmm.
And two others, one on Cornwall Street, which is our computer center. And one on Broadway Avenue, which is the church, Broadway United Church,
mm-hmm.
that we rent from. So if we were to put all that together, we would need a pretty large building because we have 80 students who attend the Broadway site English classes. So it's hard. It's just been a real uphill battle trying to find a building that will accommodate us and be affordable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're open to anybody who's out there.
The call has been put out. Anybody listening?
Because the thing is that newcomers are coming. We're starting some drop-in programming for the Syrian women in the next few weeks. Some activities for them. We will try to get space other places to do this. It would be really nice if we had a place that we could just, you know, utilize for all of these things that was our own. Our little house is so small. Just this morning, we were trying to see, could we put a sliding door in one place to make it again into another office? But then we have no room for the clients to wait. We actually have no room for the clients to wait. They just kind of stand around or go out on the lawn.
Which is not good in the winter.
No, because they can't go out on the lawn. So it's just really, really tight. Our staff is all crowded into two or three rooms. And, you know, families that come are large families sometimes. Sometimes there's five or six people in a family. And even if one or two are being done an intake on or assessed, the others need a place to sit. Mm-hmm. Or wait.
Right.
And we really do not have, I mean, they end up sitting in my office. We have two chairs in my office that are usually not always being utilized, like nice chairs, you know? And so they see them because I'm right at the front by the reception. So they'll just walk in and sit down. And then I'll just greet them and start, because I don't know what to say. You're not welcome here? No, I can't say that. You know, I'm not used to being inhospitable.
No. Right. Yeah. That wouldn't be very good. No.
Yeah. So it's a struggle.
It's a struggle.
It's a daily struggle for us.
Well, I wish you luck in the
Thank you very much.
Procurement of a new facility.
Yeah, it's really nice. We're actually going through a good funding period right now, and we have good programs that are very effective for the community of newcomers and immigrants and refugees that find their way for programs at our center. But we just need that extra space now.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Now, there's something I'd like you to talk about. The Institute for Research and Development on Inclusion and Society. Mm-hmm. You are part of this project. It's Combating Structural Violence. Mm-hmm. It brings together migrant Indigenous women with disabilities in four communities in Canada. Can you talk about this project that you're involved with?
Yes. This is a project put on by, started by IRIS, and it's actually, we are a partner in it in Regina. It's funded by the Status of Women Canada, so by the Canadian government. And there's four sites that they want to do this project. One is Regina, one is St. John's, one is Toronto, and one is Vancouver. So we are one of four of those sites, which is really, really good for us. Mm-hmm. We have some national prominence here. And so this project is, as you said, looking at structural violence against women, all women. The point is it's not really research, but to do public consultations with women, town halls, with groups of women from the Indigenous community, from the refugee, because we're looking at refugee violence. What is the structural violence against refugees? You know, we're not talking just domestic violence here, but the violence that they would have suffered. So what does that look like, and what trauma, what effect does it have? And then violence against women with mental and learning disabilities. So not just physical, but the mental disabilities. And so that's three. And then women who are, LGBT community, mm-hmm. them as well. So did I name all four? I guess the migrant. The migrant would be the refugee. Right. And so there's four or five women's communities that we're looking at, and this is being done through workshops and town halls. So we have a steering committee in Regina. So each site was asked to develop, create a steering committee of like-minded organizations, representatives from like-minded organizations, such as shelters, for instance, the police force, you know, the organizations that have a direct impact on women who are going through violence, or communities that have gone through violence, the ones that I've named. And so we have a steering committee, and so in as a follow-up to that, the first step was a community town hall, which we had on March 21st at the Mackenzie Art Gallery. And Doris Rajan, who's the executive director of this at IRIS, who's doing this project with us, so she's sort of our officer, our program officer. And so she came and she spoke on the project as well. And we had women representing all of these communities who came and spoke about their personal experiences. One of the really interesting facets of this community town hall was that we had a curtain behind which some of the women felt more comfortable sitting because they didn't want their identities revealed, or they were too shy to talk in front of others.
Hmm.
That was an interesting facet of it, because it allowed them the freedom to express themselves, mm-hmm. but not necessarily feel so public.
Right.
And it was something that we weren't sure would work, but it actually worked really well. But for those who wanted to come out and speak in front of others, that was fine too. So either way, we created a very comfortable environment for women, and thereby communities that they represent, to present their case.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next next 3 years, because it's a multi-year project, are going to consist of similar events,
mm-hmm.
so that we can gather information that we can send to IRIS, that then they can put together in a final report. And hopefully that will have effect on policy in Canada.
And what do we hope to achieve with this?
Well, we hope to achieve not as much. We hope to make a difference in terms of the violence.
Right.
Impact on why is this violence happening? What's being done about it? So we hope to arrive at some, I guess, to do some problem solving,
mm-hmm.
you know, to bring some recognition. Because a lot of times there's not even the recognition at the levels that there should be. Even within communities, there's not recognition.
Right.
So starting from the smallest to the largest, to the government, to influence some laws, some projects, further projects that might look at it, to bring about more freedom or empowerment
mm-hmm.
for women in general and in these communities.
I'm hoping that as the government goes down the road of looking at missing and murdered Indigenous women,
yes.
that there'll be some improvement in other aspects, like that there'll be more stuff happen because of what they're doing.
Exactly. So that's a very important point, and that's one that we definitely had highlighted mm-hmm. at the community town hall. Mm-hmm. Some very good speakers from the Indigenous community were present, and what it also does, it makes us all aware of each other's issues.
Right.
Which is so important, because mm-hmm. we get in silos, right,
mm-hmm.
in groups, and we just espouse our issues, and we advocate on our issues, we think, or our community leaders do, or our government leaders do on certain issues. But to make people aware of each other's issues, and then you feel like, oh, so we have a little kinship mm-hmm. here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. How can women get involved with this project if they're interested?
They have to give us a call, and they can be on the steering committee. They already may be in an organization that is represented at the steering committee.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, definitely we would invite them to come to our next committee meeting, and we should be having one sometime in the next month or so.
Should they call you or the...
They can call me.
Or Doris?
No, they would call me, because they're in Regina. So we're doing the Regina site.
Okay.
You know, so they would call me. But if they had a concern, I would definitely take it to Doris as well.
Okay.
You know, we would present it in our, this is what goes into reporting to them. Because they're really, Doris is really interested in knowing what each parts of this, the country, the four sites, what's the pulse of these issues in each of those areas? What are the similarities? What are the differences? So when she was here, she was so impressed because she came to this community town hall. You know, in Ottawa and Toronto, they think of Regina as this little place. Of course, it's growing now. They know
it
that.
It is growing.
But they don't really know how everybody here stands on some of these issues. They're familiar with Ontario, maybe Vancouver, but not with the prairies and not with Saskatchewan. So for them to come out here and to see it and hear it is great. And her reaction was like, oh, wow, this is a treasure.
Yeah.
And I need more of this from you guys, so get on it. So that's really encouraging.
It is very encouraging. That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On the work
you're doing. Thank you.
Well, we still have some time to...
We do? Well, good, because I have a question going back to the center and your experiences there. Something positive. What can you tell us about some of your most outstanding experiences or one of your most successful stories or some of your most successful stories of some of the women who've crossed the threshold of the center and who've gone on to be, I mean, they're in my book, they're all remarkable people coming to a new country and learning a new language and starting over in their lives. Is there anyone that stands out who's gone on to be...
Yeah, we have a lot of women who over the years have accomplished a lot, have become empowered. We've, just in terms of our youth, we've done a lot of placements at even in corporations, you know, like SaskTel, SaskPower. That's an accomplishment for somebody who has been educated in a different country and comes here and is able to meet the challenges of that kind of a workplace, even through a placement and then get settled there. So that's a lately those are some of the accomplishments that we're seeing. Another accomplishment that I think is important is we have women that we support in terms of family support. And that means if they're going through some rough times, it could be because of family dysfunctioning. We had a woman about 3 years ago that her family couldn't get in touch with her. And they called the North Central Family Center. The family looked through the internet and found a number. Called there because that was the only thing in Regina they could find. And people over there, of course, couldn't help, didn't know what to do. But they knew me, the executive director. So she calls me at home one morning and she says, Neelu, can you help? We have this woman who needs to be contacted and we've tried, but she won't talk with us. We went to her house and she won't talk to us, but her family's really concerned because they haven't heard about her for a month or two. So I said, okay, so I sent some staff there and she wouldn't really talk. But anyway, she was in a really tough situation by herself, didn't have any family. Took us 3 years to work with her in terms of the family support program, and now she's working independently and is a mother.
Oh, good.
Wow. And really nice. Happy.
So it's a happy ending story.
Happy ending story, but just see how it came about is what I'm saying. Sometimes people fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
And somebody's got to rescue them.
Yes.
So we also have that responsibility.
Good. Wonderful.
Neelu, I'm very, very happy to have had you here and talk to Daylene and myself about the organization that you are heading up there and all the wonderful work you do. And we have totally run out of time, so we have to say goodbye. And,
well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much,
to speak
Neelu.
With both of you and thank be on the show. I appreciate it.
Pioneering human rights campaigner Peter Benenson often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."